of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy
McNeil.
The United States House of Representatives overwhelmingly voted to provide a total of $95 billion in foreign aid over the weekend. VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us more.
The bill contains $60 billion in aid for Kyiv now in its third year of war with Moscow. It includes $26 billion for Israel's war effort against Hamas, as well as humanitarian aid for civilians in conflict zones like Gaza. And another $8 billion for the Indo-Pacific region, where Taiwan continues readiness exercises should China invade. The legislation now moves to the Senate, where a vote should come early this week, advancing the measure to U.S. President Joe Biden's desk for his signature. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Security sources say that rockets were fired from Iraq at a U.S. military base in Syria, VOA's Joe Ramsey reports.
Two Iraqi security sources told Reuters at least five rockets were launched from Iraq towards a U.S. military base in northeastern Syria on Sunday. The attack against U.S. forces is the first since early February, when Iranian-backed groups in Iraq stopped their attacks against U.S. troops. Iraq's Kataib Hezbollah said early on Monday armed groups decided to resume attacks on U.S. forces in the country after seeing little progress on talks to achieve the exit of American troops during the recent Iraqi prime minister visit to Washington. In an apparent reference to the attack late on Sunday, the group said what happened a short while ago is the beginning. Joe Ramsey, VOA News, Washington.
Palestinian health officials say Israeli strikes on Gaza's southern city of Rafah killed 22 people. The dead include 18 children. Strikes came as the United States is on track to approve billions of dollars in additional military aid. This is VOA News. Iran's supreme leader Sunday dismissed any discussion of whether Tehran's unprecedented drone and missile attack on Israel hit anything there. A tacit acknowledgement that despite launching a major assault, few projectiles actually made it through to their targets. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's comments before senior military leaders did not touch on the apparent Israeli retaliatory strike on Friday on the central city of Isfahan, even though air defenses opened fire and Iran grounded commercial flights across much of the country. AP correspondent Karen Shamus reports on the deteriorating situation in Haiti's capital of Port-au-Prince.
As gang violence chokes Haiti's capital, residents are struggling to survive. In Port-au-Prince, life has become a game of survival, pushing Haitians to new limits. As residents scramble to stay safe and alive, gangs overwhelm the police and the government remains largely absent. Gangs that control an estimated 80% of Port-au-Prince launched coordinated attacks on February the 29th, targeting critical state infrastructure. They set fire to police stations, shot up the airport, and stormed into Haiti's two biggest prisons, releasing more than 4,000 inmates. More than 95,000 people have fled the capital in 1 month alone as gangs raid communities, torching homes and killing people in territories controlled by their rivals. I'm Karen Chavas.
AP correspondent Julie Walker reports on who the key players are in Donald Trump's hush money trial underway in New York.
Opening statements for Donald Trump's hush money criminal trial expected Monday. Among the prosecution witnesses, a porn star, a Playboy model, a tabloid publisher, and Trump's former fixer-turned-foe, Michael Cohen. He went to prison after pleading guilty to campaign finance violations relating to the hush money arrangements. Cohen paid porn star Stormy Daniels $130,000 to keep quiet about what she says was a sexual encounter with Trump years earlier. The former president denies having sex with her and denies charges of falsifying business records to keep stories about his sex life secret. Trump calls the case a political witch hunt to hurt his campaign. Julie Walker, New York.
Officials say a race car veered off the track during a competition in Sri Lanka and rammed into a crowd of spectators and race officials, killing 7 people, injuring 20 others. Thousands of spectators looked on Sunday as the mishap took place during a race in a town in the tea-growing Central Hills, about 180 kilometers east of the capital of Colombo. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barkey in Washington. Today is Monday, April 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN says some 800,000 people in one Sudanese city are in extreme and immediate danger.
Internally, this problem is also very, very difficult to solve because of historical memory, the crisis of how Sudan was brought together as a country of so many different types of ethnic groups and clans and religions.
Kenyan President William Ruto called for a thorough investigation into the helicopter crash that killed Chief of Defense Forces General Francis Ogala. Uganda traders and their strike over taxes. USAID questions the integrity of Liberia's health system. Today, Monday, marks Earth Day with the theme, Planet versus Plastics.
Today, on the 22nd of April, we're going to be doing two activities to mark Earth Day. One of them is about protecting the Earth from the perspective of sanitation.
And Zimbabwe human rights groups question the recent release of thousands of prisoners. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Top United Nations officials warned the Security Council on Friday that some 800,000 people in one Sudanese city are in extreme and immediate danger as worsening violence advances and threatens to unleash bloody intercommunal strike throughout Darfur. According to the UN, nearly 25 million people, half of Sudan's population, need aid, and some 8 million have fled their homes. Political analyst David Monda tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga he thinks the Sudan crisis has been overshadowed by conflicts elsewhere.
I would rank that conflict probably as one of the worst in modern history, in the post-Cold War world. And two big reasons why it's not getting a lot of headlines. Obviously, one is that strategically, Sudan is just not on the radar of the major powers. And Africa Union has historically been very weak in addressing some of these crises that erupt on the continent. I think the second factor obviously would be Ukraine, Russia, and Israel, Hamas. And now that Middle Eastern problem, which seems to be expanding to Israel and Iran. So that's really taken attention away from Sudan. The other issue with Sudan is it's also competing with other crises in Africa. You know, the problem in the starvation in Ethiopia that's now becoming a humanitarian crisis. Then the other crisis in the DRC, which has perennially been a big problem. And then in addition to that is also the fact that the international community tends to get very fatigued with this conflict.
Like similar conflicts, there are those who say there are external factors that are fueling that conflict. Do you agree with that?
I definitely agree with that. And I think that's one of the reasons, what we call exogenous factors, right? These things that come from outside of Sudan. Obviously, one of the big ones is major players or regional actors that are involved in the conflict. So on one hand, you have the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, Russia, which seem to have been favoring General Hemedti. But then on the other hand, you have the Burhan administration, which is supported by Israel and Egypt. So these foreign actors make it even more complicated because, as they say, when you have too many cooks in the kitchen, baking the cake becomes difficult. Each player has its own different interest in this cooking pot called Sudan. But I must also say that internally, this problem is also very, very difficult to solve because of historical memory, the crisis of how Sudan was brought together as a country of so many different types of ethnic groups and clans and religions. But more importantly, this divide between the central government of Burhan in Khartoum and Hemedti's forces, the RSF, which get a lot of their support from the Darfur region in the western part of Sudan. So that's also really complicating this situation more. And it can even possibly lead to a split of Sudan into two, meaning Darfur also pushes for its own independence separate from the central government in Khartoum.
That was David Mondat, a professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke from New York City with VOA's Douglas Mpuga. Kenyan President William Ruto has called for a thorough and unhindered investigation into the helicopter crash that killed the Kenyan Chief of Defense Forces, General Francis Ogola. General Ogola and nine other military personnel died last Thursday when their helicopter crashed in the North Rift region of the country. President Ruto spoke Sunday at General Ogola's funeral at the conclusion of a three-day of national mourning.
It is true, we have lost many Kenyans because of extrajudicial killings. It is also true that we have lost many Kenyans because of political assassinations. And I made a commitment to the people of Kenya that there will never be, and let me say this, as has been said here by others, for the avoidance of doubt and without any fear of contradiction, there shall never be again extrajudicial killings or political assassinations. I have full confidence in KDF. They are our foremost professional entity in Kenya. They have demonstrated beyond any doubt their professionalism and integrity. And therefore, I have full confidence that General Omenda and the team he has appointed to make sure that all details are laid bare on the accident that took away the life of General Ogola. I know the KDF are as concerned as I am, and indeed the family and every Kenyan, on the life of General Ogola. And I want to assure the country that the KDF, our Kenya Air Force, have the requisite integrity and professionalism to make sure that there will be no shroud of doubt on what happened to General Ogola.
Kenyan President William Ruto speaking Sunday at General Francis Ogola's funeral at the conclusion of 3 days of national mourning. After 2 weeks on strike, Ugandan traders have agreed to resume work today, Monday, after their leaders met with President Yoweri Museveni over the matter. President Museveni instructed the suspension of hefty fines imposed on defaulting traders and promised to sit with the technocrats to seek for a suitable solution. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
Kampala businessman Ivan Mawanda says he has incurred losses after closing his business for a trader's strike. He has to pay his four workers, electricity and sanitation bills, rent and government taxes. Yet, Mawanda, who deals in electronics, says he's glad the strike took place because of what he considers high taxes. Since the beginning of April, traders in Kampala and other cities have intermittently closed businesses protesting the value-added tax, income tax and introduction of the Electronic Fiscal Recepting and Invoicing System, or EFRIS. He terms EFRIS as confusing.
First of all, power is an issue. Internet connectivity, internet also to us is still expensive because we cannot afford being on online full-time. You are going to get customers, the system is off and you cannot serve them, yet the other people want you to serve them using that system, yet no network, no what. Basically, we don't understand the system.
Businessmen with annual gross sales of 150 million Uganda shillings, or about $40,000, are required to pay a value-added tax of VAT. Issa Sechito is the spokesperson of Kampala Traders Association. Sechito says, unfortunately, this threshold isn't always considered.
It is very unfortunate that this system comes into a country where the majority of the taxpayers, especially from the import side, are informal. Therefore, none registered for VAT. And this what it means is that when you import goods, definitely at entry point you pay 18%. You as well pay withholding tax, which is almost income tax payable in advance.
On Friday, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni met the traders' leaders. He posted on his ex, former Twitter handle, that he has asked the traders to give him time to research and consult with technocrats on all their concerns. would then meet them on 7th May at Koro Independence Grounds for further discussions. He added that he has directed the Uganda Revenue Authority to refrain from issuing penalties and recovering any penalties that have been issued, though taxpayers must continue to pay their taxes as usual. Sechito says he hopes President Museveni honors his promise.
The IFRIS, the way we explained the president, we are optimistic that even if it's not going to be completely wiped out, something must be done, or else the districts that did not join before, I'm sure even if there is another demonstration, will join.
Sechito is calling on the inclusion of traders in petrol rights meeting with the president. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarindi in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, April 22nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Today, Monday, is Earth Day. The theme of this year's celebration is Planet versus Plastics. Activists are calling for a 60% reduction in the production of plastics by 2040. The World Economic Forum's Global Risk Report of 2024 says environmental issues make up half of the top 10 risks over the next 10 years. Yvonne Akisoyo is the mayor of Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. She tells me the city will observe the day by focusing on sanitation and visiting the city's tree planting areas.
Today, on the 22nd of April, we're going to be doing two activities to mark Earth Day. One of them is about protecting the earth from the perspective of sanitation. We're very excited to be starting an extension of our public space cleaning. We will, for the first time, have almost 1,000 young people on the streets of Freetown doing public space cleaning. And that's really an important part of protecting the earth, because improved sanitation means you're able to keep waterways clean, you're able to prevent flooding, and you really improve the quality of life of people. The other thing that I'm going to be doing later on in the afternoon, which is equally as exciting, is visiting some of our tree planting, particularly mangrove planting down at Coco Bay, which is an area where 40,000 trees, mangroves, have been planted. And we will, by June, be planting double that. And this falls under our hashtag Freetown, the Tree Town campaign of planting 1 million trees. And again, it's not just planting, it's growing. So just like with the sanitation work, we have also and will continue to be creating jobs for young people. So on this Earth Day, it's about keeping our environment clean. It's about planting more trees, planting more mangroves, and creating green jobs in the process.
So, Mayor, you talk about sanitation. It seems that many African cities have a problem with solid waste management. Is this a problem also for your city, Freetown? And how are you dealing with that?
It is definitely a major challenge. And it, like you rightly say, it's one that plagues many cities, not just in Africa, but across the world. We have also strengthened our bylaws, and in this week coming, we'll be seeing those updated bylaws, which will bring in stronger measures, more clarity around sanitation breaches for residents. You need to change behaviors as part of improving a waste management system, and having laws in place is an important part of that. But another part of that is the change that we're going to be doing in terms of household waste collection. Between now and the end of the year, we're doing a radical overhaul of our waste management processes, where the city will be stepping in and having the private contractors work with us or through us, as opposed to having it being done directly private contractors to residents.
Yvonne Aki-Sawyer is the mayor of Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. She was speaking with us from Freetown. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, has criticized the Liberian health sector for mismanaging donated products to diagnose and treat HIV, malaria, and tuberculosis. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
USAID says medical supplies for malaria, tuberculosis, and HIV worth US $40 million that it and the Global Fund donated last year to Liberia were not used for the intended purpose due to fraud. USAID Liberia Mission Director Jim Wright says the agency has been working with six civil society health organizations to improve access to medicines. He says a 2023 report has revealed that 90% of medicines donated by USAID and the Global Fund are stolen and sold in pharmacies.
The problem that we have not been able to solve so far is ensuring that medicine is available to everyone in Liberia who needs it. The medicine that comes in often doesn't find its way to the remote health clinics throughout the country. For years, that has been a major problem, that a lot of the medicine that goes to the central medical store is stolen. So we know there has, over the years, been widespread systematic theft of medicine from the central medical store.
Joyce Klippo is the executive director of Public Health Initiatives Liberia, one of the six USAID-sponsored civil society organizations in health that has been monitoring the situation. She confirms the fraud.
The monitoring work done by us basically look at availability of donated medicine at government facilities, and we have come to understand that though the medicine should be free, but most of the citizens were being said to pay.
Liberia's last Minister of Health, Dr. Wilhelmina Jala, says there were reports that drugs were being stolen and there is an ongoing investigation. However, she says the allegation that over 90% of all medicines are diverted is not realistic.
First of all, we need to know what kind of medicines USAID donate to the government. USAID purchase malaria drugs. They do not purchase essential medicine like antibiotics. But making statement as if to say every drugstore in your country is selling stolen drugs, it's a false statement. Go to the drugstores and check.
Current Health Minister Dr. Luis Porto declined to comment until she says she can better understand the situation. But she promised to reach out when more information is available. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
Human rights groups in Zimbabwe say recent release of thousands of detainees by the government falls short of their demands for a comprehensive overhaul of the country's judicial system and citizens' rights. Kennedy Masiya is a Zimbabwe human rights lawyer. He tells viewers Jinedu Ofor that the entire judicial system needs reform.
We have seen people who being imprisoned for offenses that they have not committed. We've seen a lot of political prisoners spending enormous time in prison over offenses that do not really go towards the tenets of human rights. So this in itself, we can say, alleviates the situation in prisons, which is dire, but there's a need to overhaul the whole judicial system.
Is this a political decision or a humanitarian decision by the government?
Well, one thing I can tell you about the Zimbabwean government is like everything is politicized. And also in the timing this amnesty was done, it was just towards the independent celebrations. So it somehow, to me, might have been meant to somehow give the government led by Mr. Mnangagwa some sort of semblance of action, but everything in Zimbabwe is purely politicized.
Some activists and analysts are disappointed that, quote, political prisoners were not released, but that, quote, petty criminals were released. What are your thoughts on this?
That also speaks to the timing itself. The release was probably meant to appease people who are within the ruling ZANU-PF party and less to do with really the generality of probably why this amnesty should be done. So you saw that there were no political prisoners that were released. And some of the cases that these political prisoners are in prison for cases that have to do with probably speaking out against the government, the ruling government. So when you talk about amnesty, yes, it is in terms of the laws of Zimbabwe that the president from time to time can grant amnesty to this process. Basically, should really look into alleviating the pressures within this prison system. And also, the system should be fair and everyone should be accorded an opportunity who qualifies to be released. But this, as shown by the release, is not it. It is purely political and no political prisoners were released.
That's Zimbabwe human rights attorney Kennedy Macias speaking with VOA's Gina Duofor from Dallas, Texas. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the 2024 CAF Futsal Africa Cup of Nations as the Atlas Lions of Morocco clinched their third consecutive CAF Futsal African title following a stunning 5-1 victory over Angola in Sunday's entertaining final. A sold-out Prince Mole Abdullah Hall witnessed Hisham Diou write history by joining Egypt as the two teams to have won the Continental Championship on three occasions. Goals from Sofiane Boriti, Bilal Bakali, Anas El Ayane, Idris Rais El Feni, and Captain Sofiane El Massar were enough to secure Morocco the victory in front of their fans. Morocco, Angola, and Libya will represent the continent at the FIFA Futsal World Cup in Uzbekistan later this year. And now to the CAF Champions League, where Tunisian side Osporans took a slender 1-0 advantage after the first leg of their CAF Champions League semi-final against South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns on Saturday night. The pivotal goal came 4 minutes before halftime, despite Sundowns having several chances to equalize in the second half. The Tunisian side held firm to take a lead into next week's second leg in Pretoria. Sundowns coach Rulani Mokwena shortly after the match said his side lost to a better team.
I thought we were brave on the ball. I thought we defended very well. I thought we suffered together in moments when we had to suffer against a very good team.
In the other semi-final, reigning African champions Al Ahly will be happy to take a goalless draw to the return leg of the semi-finals after holding five-time champions TP Mazembe to a goalless draw in Lubumbashi. It was a frustrating afternoon for the former champions who labored for the victory but were held at bay by the defending champions who will be happy with the results on the road. In athletics, Olympic champion Peres Jepchirchir smashed the women-only world record by 45 seconds at the TCS London Marathon, winning the World Athletics Platinum Liber Road Race in 2 hours, 16 minutes, 16 seconds, in what was widely regarded as one of the deepest and highest quality women's fields ever assembled. The 3-time world half-marathon champion sprinted away from the world record holder, Tixit Asifa, 2021 London winner Jocelyn Jepkosgei, and last year's runners-up Margaritu Alemu, all of whom finished inside 2 hours 17 minutes to notch up her third victory in the World Marathon Majors race. Peres Jepchirchir, in her post-race interview, said she was surprised at her victory.
I'm feeling grateful. I'm so happy. Unbelievable. I was not expecting that. I was knowing that we can go and break the record, but I was not expecting to be me. Yeah. When I was in 40 kilometers, I say, let me relax it. And then 41 kilometers, whereby I will exaggerate or I wait until 600 meters. Yeah.
And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, April 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.